Welcome back, friends. Sarah and I are discussing what is a Catholic marriage and is it a bar too high? So the chief end. So Baltimore Catechism, paragraph 1010, will state that the chief ends of the sacrament of matrimony are to enable the husband and wife to aid each other in securing the salvation of their souls, to propagate or keep up the existence of the human race by bringing children into the world to serve God, and 3, to prevent sins against the holy virtue of purity by faithfully obeying the laws of the marriage state. The 4 F's of Catholic marriage, which we can take out from paragraphs 1625, 1638, and 1614 are: it's free, fruitful, forsaking others, and forever. So, and this, as we all can abundantly see, is beyond human capacity. So, I think there is some realization within this, it's a bar too high, that people realize if that's what that means, is you gotta, be continent. It has to be forever. You have to have an openness to children, have to have free will, not be coerced in some fashion. Is that not really above human capacity? And that's where the notion of oaths and sacraments come in. Because we encounter this in marriage, and let's say those who take oath in the judicial system, right? I solemnly swear the truth, and that is sometimes beyond the capacity. Military take an oath that a grace, a help will be supplied to them in those moments when it is beyond human capacity. So we have other aspects where we see that something is being asked for of us, and we know it can at times be beyond us.
Why do you think particularly the case for us? I just don't think that in any other prior time, I mean, I'm not going to say that marriage was necessarily any easier per se, right? I mean, the literature is replete with marriages that are that have adulterers in them and whatnot. But none of them, the literature does not navel gaze the way that we do, if that makes sense.
That's true. No one was around saying, well, we need to just say living together or various forms of coupling. Right. Is the same as marriage, which is in a sense getting rid of the concept of marriage, because that's by definition, right? I didn't put in man and woman there in the 4 F's of marriage, but that's right. The underpinning of that.
Right.
And I think because we've gotten away from a supernatural understanding of God working within our lives in a real and meaningful way, you know.
Do you think that technology has had a lot to do with that? That man, you know, I mean, if you look back when we were talking about the period in modernism, that that man wanted to become master of nature, as
yes.
opposed to be a steward of it or a cooperator with it, because the more that we try and control biology. Right. And the means of procreation and whatnot, because I was having a conversation with someone the other day, just talking about, this rise in the concept that there could exist something such as a quote unquote homosexual marriage, which is only intellectually possible because we have been able to separate these I don't like to call them ends of marriage, these dual ends, but I guess for the lack of terminology, that we've put a separation between that element that I think the Baltimore Catechism is much more succinct on what the unitive element of marriage is, meaning that it is to tend toward the salvation of the couple. I mean, how clear is that, right? Because that has really nothing to do with sexuality or with the marital embrace per se, which I think is distorted in the Casti Canubi, maybe not so much Casti Canubi, but definitely in Humanae Vitae, right? And then the reality of the fact that a male and a female coming together can bring forth the new generation, right? But now we are trying to thwart that element by, you know, even within a generation or two or three, I think that we're going to have artificial wombs, right? I mean, China is working on that. And so there's going to have to be a reckoning with technology. And the church has been very clear that anything that inhibits the real act of the marriage, right? That anything that comes as a hindrance in there is not of God. But we have been very, very hesitant to make that statement boldly. The church has permitted a lot of, shall we say, water to flow under the bridge before a correction is coming. So it's going to be very, very challenging, and our children and their children are going to face realities that we never even contemplated if we cannot come to an authentic understanding of the true good that comes from this union of man and woman through this sacrament.
That's right. The word Freemason kept just coming up. It just kept coming up. But I go, do we really want to go to Freemasons? That's not really, I don't have the research on that and so forth, so on. But it just, that's the goal of Freemasonry, right? Is that man can create his own world by his own rules, right? I love Frank Sinatra. I really do. I love his music. And I don't mean to disparage the man, but, you know, the theme song of hell is I did it my way.
Right.
That's right. His song. I did it my way. And that's what, that's one of their
tenets, certainly.
Is one of the tenets. Right. And
I think, though, that most people, not to disagree with you, I probably do agree with you essentially on that. But I think that the vast majority of people, I think even that is too far away from them to even be part of their reality, because it has been so swallowed into the culture that they would assent to the fact that they follow no one's lead but their own.
That's true.
Whether or not it was informed by them or not, which I do think that we both have to agree that this rise or this desire for an absolute control of nature certainly stems from, you know, the period of empiricism, right? When you've got the rise of revolution and the rise of you know, science becoming the be all end all, until science disagrees with what the be all end all wants, right? I mean, because science cannot truly deny God. Science can only and ever always point to him and to the truth of what he proposes. But at this point, I think we have to find a language that is going to help us be able to speak to a generation that has become almost exclusively narcissistic, believing that they are, you know, I mean, it's almost the non servium. I will not serve, you know, unless it serves me.
Yes. And that's, I think, the language of the Second Catechism, even though it's not as clear and engaging to the intellect as the Baltimore Catechism is, it tries to offer a narrative. It tries to offer a story, like the Iliad that I opened up with, offers a story. Or even the rosary, you know, is composed of stories.
Mm-hmm.
And coming at the modern man from a Narraccio perspective. And actually they did, you know, that was done in pagan Rome with the pagans there, you know, coming at it with a story and look to see how it's unfolded and your place in it and the dignity of marriage and so forth. That's the proposal of the way to get to the modern man, because just listing crisply, when you say I'm not going to serve, and you know, they're so far down the path of
hedonism, really.
Hedonism.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's very sad, but we have come to a point where they make demands on society, that used to be the understanding is that man lives together in society for the benefit of all. But now these individuals who they have totally eclipsed themselves or separated themselves from that reality and now firmly only believe that society exists to serve them as an individual, right? I mean, so we must have this massive state so that the individual can have not rights, but license. And we really, I think that we are kind of at a tipping point in regards to that, because especially in light of, you know, how you had mentioned before that the case against Roe versus Wade was finally decided correctly. And immediately thereupon, Clarence Thomas came out and said, bring us hearings on Obergefell and Lawrence v. Texas and Griswold v. Connecticut, which are all intrinsically linked to this false notion of privacy, that I think is a direct fruit of, and maybe it is even the same, you know, genre of sin that separated Adam and Eve at the very beginning, is that man and woman no longer come together for the mutual benefit of the other, but they come together now solely for their own benefit. And until the woman stops scratching the itch or the man stops, you know, scratching her itch, whatever, once that stops and there's no benefit itself, there's a rupture. Whereas that is, you know, from that, I think that's why I was saying that Baltimore Catechism is very, very clear. You are not coming together for your own earthly benefit. You are specifically coming together to yoke yourselves for eternal salvation. So until we can get a population truly to be aware that there is a grave consequence to not following the order of the nuptial life that our Lord is calling us into, there's a great risk, I think, for future generations, because they will keep walking down this, I don't know even what you would call it. It's such a nihilistic path, like thinking that you can control life will only lead them to death.
That's very true. That's very true. Friends, we're going to pick this up in the next episode. Till then, fides, Ratio.